What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, I'm just going to keep it brief here. Just how was your weekend, my man?
Listen, it was good, dude. I got way more into the tournament, the men's tournament, I should say, than I thought I would this year. Shout out to the Miami Hurricanes into the Sweet 16. That's pretty exciting.
You called that.
I did call that. I genuinely thought they were going to beat Auburn. I didn't know much about college basketball, but I did know that a lot of people were saying the ACC came into the tournament, maybe a little underrated. I know the Hurricanes didn't break into the top 25 this year, but that's like the one college basketball team I somewhat follow just by the nature of who I follow on Twitter. So shout out to my Hurricanes. That's pretty exciting. What about you? You've been sending some really angry tweets during the tournament that you don't even – the kinds of tweets you don't even send during, like, NBA games. And you're just complaining about the refs.
Yeah, so basically what happened – I said this a little bit on last week's episode, but the University of Delaware, my alma mater, we don't make it to the NCAA tournament basically ever. I think twice in my lifetime and twice since I graduated, this would be the second time. So I was getting pretty hyped. I'm not going to lie. Saw that we were playing Villanova, a team that we've never beaten in the school's history. And, you know, my expectations weren't very high. And then I'm watching the game. We're looking pretty good. Villanova looks soft as hell. And we're up with like 4 minutes to go in the first half. I crack open a beer. I'm feeling very confident. I'm feeling myself. That
first mistake. Cracking open a beer.
It's just like the refs are terrible. I'm just like, this is why I don't watch this. This is a different sport than the NBA. The referees don't know what's going on. This is rigged. And I was sick of it.
This
it's like
rigged.
And then I watched Baylor, North Carolina, and there was like an amazing
that was
comeback
a good
in that
game. That was a good game.
Good game. Also, the refs were terrible in it. But
I didn't think the refs were that. Everyone was freaking out in the second half. It was fine by the end.
It's maybe you're watching too much college basketball then, because it was bad. So, but you watch that game and there was this comeback and that's great. But basically every other game when I'm watching college basketball, because of the shot clock, because of how crappy offenses run, because of how bad the 3-point shooting is, I'm just like, when a team is up 10 or 12, I'm just like, all right, it's over. Just like,
the problem is yes or no. On one hand, it's like, it's over. But then you see in that North Carolina Baylor game, teams can make a huge comeback because the other team can go cold. One team has like apparently never heard of the concept of a full court press. They'll just start missing free throws. The one in one is so amateurish. I hate it. Like, it makes me feel like I'm playing rec basketball in Coral Springs again. Like, what are we doing here? It's been a fun tournament though. I'm putting you on the spot here, which I know you love when I do that, but have you been watching any of like the top prospects? Do you have any thoughts on any of the guys who people think are going to be coming out of the draft? Like, yesterday was probably the first time I watched Duke all year. I mean, all season. And it was just to see if Coach K would lose. Boncaro, I was like, damn, this guy like was leaping off the screen to me. Curious if you've had any of those moments.
I did not watch that game. I was watching Bad Vegan with my wife.
Yeah, I've heard Bad Vegan's good.
It's fire. I do not regret that decision.
Shit. Okay, I gotta watch Bad Vegan. I've been watching The Dropout. It's like based on the Theranos woman. It's just like a one good long roast of like Elizabeth Holmes, and it's incredible. It's so good.
It is that is a pretty good show. Yeah. But to answer your question, you know, I've seen a little bit of Chet. He looks interesting.
Do you have a Chet take? Do you have a Chet take formulated yet?
I'm excited for his career. Mm-hmm. Honestly, he's a huge risk. He's Kristaps. He's whatever. He's Rudy, but thinner. And I'm kind of just like, okay, I don't believe any of that. I think he's like a super special rim protector. I have faith in like with nutrition and just like strength and conditioning when you get to the pros.
Yes.
It's just like, I think he's not going to look like this forever.
Right.
And I don't know. I know Giannis is not like the, we shouldn't be comparing people to Giannis, but like, look at Giannis's body now versus when he entered the NBA.
You're the same guy who compared Şengün to Nikola Jokic on a podcast earlier this season. So I don't know why.
Şengün, yesterday. I did watch the Rockets yesterday, and that man is, I love him so much.
He's very fun. The Rockets are kind of fun when they play the kids. Them. Yeah.
Yes.
Can I introduce a new segment on the show real quick before we get to what we're supposed to get to?
We have a lot of stuff to do today.
I know. I think it'll be a brief segment though, but can I introduce it if you don't mind?
Sure. Okay.
I just want to introduce, because we were texting about this yesterday. So I would just like to introduce the Boston Celtics confidence meter. Because that tank's got to be full right now. They packed up my Nuggets yesterday. It was like a 30-point game very quickly. They looked fantastic against the Warriors last week in a game that I was so mad because I was like, oh, I'm so excited for this game. Immediately, Steph goes out. The Celtics go up. I could have watched a movie. Instead, I was watching this game. The Warriors make a fake comeback, so I didn't start my movie in the third quarter like I'd planned. Boston continues to roll. I put them second in my Eastern Conference contender power rankings last week. I think Milwaukee's the only team I have above them. So what's your – give me like a confidence. Give me a temp check. Where are you on the Celtics right now? Because I think there's an argument that they're the favorite to come out of the East. Where are you?
So first of all, just a little peek behind the curtain for our listeners. I shipped you a Peyton Pritchard jersey, and you sent me a photograph of yourself sleeping in it, and I was taken aback by that. So a little too much information on that one, but I'm glad you got the gift. I'm glad you're a huge fan of Peyton, whose 3-point shooting is back up above 40% after last night's just fireworks display.
Well, he is taking a lot of wide open ones. I just want to throw that out there.
They're going in. Hey, they were going in earlier this season.
Yeah.
I jokingly tweeted this morning, and there was a article by Sham Sharania of The Athletic this morning, you know, his insider pieces that come out once every couple of weeks. And the lead, he said that there was eight teams that have revealed themselves as championship favorites or title favorites or legitimate contenders. I forget the exact verbiage, but the Celtics were not one of those eight teams.
What?
And I was like, what's going on here?
I breezed past that part just to read to the Brad Beal to the Heat rumors. That's nuts not to put the Celtics. I mean, I got the Celtics above Brooklyn and Philly right now.
The Celtics were in piled into this this second group, second tier with like the Timberwolves and the Lakers. I was just like, are we watching the NBA? Are we watching the same league right now? This team is like 21-3 in their last 24 games. Like, come on. So,
but anyway, well, we're still waiting for your answer.
I'm very high on the Celtics. I like them a lot. I think they're built to win the championship. And that's where we're at with them. Tatum looks great. Tatum should be getting some MVP buzz. Frankly, I don't think he's going to win.
That's a step too far.
I mean, my friend, I want you to dig into the numbers sometime and we can have this. No. I know. Yeah. You and Wu are just every time Tatum comes up.
That's not true. That's not me with Tatum. Don't let
I'm
me
anti-knowledge, anti-facts on this debate. But Tatum's been great. Jalen looks really good. Al Horford looks amazing. They've got, you know, obviously the defense is going to carry them as far as they go, but offensively they've been, I think, third in the NBA since the All-Star break, just torching everybody. So they look good and are a championship contender.
It's terrifying. I don't like it. If we get a Heat Celtics playoff series, we might just have to like take the pod. I don't think we can do the pod together during that.
I'm going the other way. We're gonna be doing daily pods. there's a series. They're gonna be therapy sessions.
We should be forced to like be living in a house together during it. Real world style. Just
feel, exactly. There's, yeah, there's, yeah. The confessionals. Yeah, yeah, Rohan exactly. sent me this text today making fun of Ime Udoka's defensive strategy in the third quarter last night's game, and I wanted to fight him so bad.
Peyton Pritchard giving Enes Kanter a standing ovation.
I don't even know. You keep texting me this. I literally don't know what you're talking about.
Remember the game that Kanter checked in? It was like the after he made.
He changed his name to Freedom. Can we? Yes, it was the first.
Sorry. You're right. You're right. You really are right. It was the first game after he changed his name to Enes Freedom, and he checked into the game. And he got a standing ovation for apparently no reason other than he said some really terrible things. And Peyton Pritchard was among those who stood up and clapped. I just found it interesting. He's just a great teammate.
Took note That's what you of want. It. Yeah. Wonderful teammate, born winner. Okay, Rohan, that was a wonderful preamble to our show. We have a lot to get to today. We're going to be opening up the mailbag to discuss the play-in, some updates on the NBA's never-ending Robert Sarver investigation, LeBron's increasingly impressive body of work, and so much more. But first, a quick reminder to our wonderful listeners to please keep your emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. All right, Rohan, so I want to start today's show by quickly checking in with our favorite team, the Brooklyn Nets. They've looked unbeatable of late while also recently receiving some discouraging news about Ben Simmons, thanks to a herniated disc in his back. It does not sound like Simmons will be taking the floor anytime soon with his new team. He has not been practicing. He has not been working out. And according to multiple reports, recently had an epidural injection to ease the pain. Not good. That's not what you want if you're Brooklyn. The Nets are 6-6 since the All-Star break, 25th in defense, 5th in offense. Are you crossing them off as a title contender if Simmons just misses the entire year?
I'm not crossing them off only because I will never cross off a team that has Kevin Durant on it personally. Out of my deep respect, fear, terror, admiration for Kevin Durant, I won't cross them off. But they become mortal. They become incredibly mortal. They become a flawed team without Simmons. I mean, obviously, they're, you know, there's no perfect team, but the juggernaut that we thought was being created there, obviously, when they first acquired even James Harden, the team we think they can be if Kyrie's able to play full time. Without Simmons, I think that they can still win it. I just think the degree of difficulty becomes a lot harder. But I'm not crossing them off. Are you? You think they're? I think they become. It's interesting because I like Seth Curry a lot. He's an important player for them. So is Patty Mills. Obviously, so is Kyrie. We still don't really know who their closing five is going to be. I have to imagine LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be in there. I just don't see them playing Kevin Durant at center in the playoffs. I don't know who their closing five is going to be, but they're going to have players who are going to get targeted pretty aggressively on defense. That's going to be a big issue for them, but I'm not crossing them off. What about you?
I'm not either. I also don't, you know, I don't think Aldridge is going to close games for them defensively. He's looked really bad this year, but
who do you think their final five is right now? If you had to think about it,
you know, obviously this is matchup dependent, but I love, you know, and of course we don't know if they're going to be playing at home or on the road, but if Kyrie is available, you got Kyrie, KD. I think Bruce Brown's a lock in that five. Patty. And then it's like Claxton or Seth. Like that's are you going big? You going real small? What are you going to do? But
I just think they've relied so much more on Aldridge than Claxton this year that
I think Drummond gives them better minutes, honestly, than LaMarcus at this point, which is, I mean, that's why I'm asking if we think we're writing them off, right? Like,
I mean, the thing is, it's like you look at all the teams in the East now have a big that you kind of need to pay attention to a little bit.
For sure.
So I don't know how they get away with not playing one of their bigs.
You could go James Johnson instead of Bruce Brown and then put Seth there. And they've got some options, but I just think offensively they've got so much shooting over the course of a game that it's going to be, assuming Kyrie plays, it's just going to be so tough to defend this team. Like, over a 7-game series, there's only so many adjustments you can make. So they're really interesting. But I have a quick follow-up, and then I want to move on because I'm actually already bored talking about the Nets. I'm sorry. Did they make a mistake making this trade? Like, do you think they would still make it the Harden trade if they knew that Simmons wasn't physically able to play in the regular season, let alone the playoffs, and like get acclimated in his new environment?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think they still make this trade. At the end of the day, they were hamstrung, no pun intended, with Harden because he could have become a free agent this summer. He was going to find a way to force his way to Philly. The fact that they, at the end of the day, are really only negotiating with one team and are able to get what they got, I think they made a pretty good trade. I think Curry's going to help them. Drummond, as you mentioned, I mean, Drummond's given them some good minutes. He's looked lively for the Nets. And beyond that, at the end of the day, I mean, Simmons is young. Obviously, you don't want to waste any Kevin Durant seasons. He's been so good. He's been playing at such an incredibly high level. You can't just throw away a Durant season. At the same time, I think there is a little bit of a long-term view with Simmons and what he can become and how he can factor into this team for the next few years. So I still think the trade was a no-brainer for them because you're only negotiating with one team at that point.
Okay, so the Nets are in all likelihood slash definitely going to be in the play-in. And that brings us to this really fun email from Tosin. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Tosin. But Tosin writes, "Hi, gents. Happy first day of spring. As we head into the playoffs, I am again trying to understand why we have a play-in tournament.
Oh, okay.
Isn't 82 games enough to justify your place in slash out of the postseason? I mean, let's be honest. If you finish 10th in a group of 15, then you honestly do not deserve another two opportunities to sneak into the playoffs. Additionally, any team that finishes 10th likely stinks, and we legit don't want to see them in the playoffs. The league's original thought was that this might discourage tanking late at the end of the season, but let's not kid ourselves. If a team is already down that tanking path, then I find it hard to believe they will go all out to win the play-in games. Please humor me." So I'm just going to read off a few reasons why the play-in is an unmitigated success. And Tosin, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I appreciate the email. Number one, if you're the seventh seed, you have two tries to win one game at your own gym. If you can't do that, then you aren't good enough to be in the playoffs. That's like, so right there, boom. Like, I'm sorry. I have no sympathy for a seventh seed that doesn't make the playoffs. If you can't win two games against lower seeded teams in your own gym. Like, that's just straight up what it is. Number two, single elimination games are very entertaining.
I was going to say, I don't think that they made this to, I don't think this was an anti-tanking measure. This was a, how do we get as many single elimination games as possible measure.
You're right. And it was a, and this kind of goes into some of my other reasoning, but it was a, how do we spruce up the regular season as well? So I do think that when combined with recent lottery reform, that the play-in dramatically reduces any advantage that the worst teams, well, the lottery reform reduced any advantage that the worst teams have of getting the number one pick. And the play-in kind of helps deter tanking because, I mean, you look at a team for the, like, as an example, this season you have the Pelicans. Like, the Pelicans had no reason to trade for CJ McCollum. They had no reason to, play hard. And instead, they're going to be in the play-in. And they're feisty. And they're really intriguing. Yeah. And that's fun. That's, like, more fun for that city, that market, and an actual play-in where you have this team that's suddenly dangerous because of activity that they made at the trade deadline. And just like caring about the end of the season as opposed to tanking, which is what they could otherwise be doing in this totally lost season where Zion, and now it was reported Zion's not going to play a game this regular season. It could have been a totally lost experience for everyone there. Instead, they're competitive because of the play-in. But the number one thing for me, beyond everything I've already said, is its effect on the playoff standings, where teams want to avoid the play-in that are already in the playoffs.
Yes.
If that makes sense. So like,
yes.
The six seed battle in the West.
The Toronto Cleveland race. Yes. In the East. Yes. Yes.
So you have Toronto, Cleveland, and Chicago in the East. You're exactly right. All trying to avoid a showdown with the Brooklyn Nets for that in that playoff play-in game. And then in the West, even more fascinating, I think, is Denver, Minnesota, Denver, Dallas. Those teams would otherwise just like not care, and they'd be resting players down the stretch here. Instead, every game really, really matters.
Yes, and yes.
That's awesome. So that's because of the play-in. So I'm a big play-in fan. Don't care, again, if you're a seven seed and you don't make it because
right.
you
One
lost
thing
two
is,
games.
Another thing is, it's like, how many seven seeds historically have won first round matchups? The idea, like, the thing is like, even if we lost this seven seed because they lost those two games, like, yeah, were they going to win in the first round anyway? Like, we
no.
got some more fun out of
they
it.
We were going to get smoked.
So. Also, look at what we've got the first 2 years in the play-in. We had a LeBron Steph, what essentially felt like a playoff game. That was incredible. Who knows if we're ever going to see that again with the way the Lakers are going. This year, we're going to get Kevin Durant. We were texting about this because I said I think the Nets are getting in the playoffs no matter what. And in part because I was like, I trust Kevin Durant in any kind of winner-take-all scenario. And now you might get two of those with KD. You might get like two game seven-ish vibe games from KD before we even get to the real playoffs. Like, that's an unmitigated win. I'm with you. It's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I don't mean to be rude to our emailers ever. I appreciate the email, but get on board the plan. Like, it's yeah. it's awesome. It's not a bad thing. It's yeah. really good.
Join us in the plan lounge, baby. Just
exactly.
You know, yeah.
That's where we're at. That's actually where we're going to be filming our real world style
yeah.
episodes. So check those out on YouTube at some point over the next couple months. I want to step out of the mailbag. We didn't actually receive an email about this topic, Ron, but I wanted to talk about it because I feel it's important. And our colleague, Howard Beck, on Friday, I believe, or last week at some point, spoke to Reverend Al Sharpton about his plan to protest the length of the NBA's investigation into Phoenix Suns and Phoenix Mercury owner Robert Sarver's allegedly racist behavior, and beyond racist behavior, just bad behavior,
just
all behavior
many
overall.
Many allegations of misconduct.
Yes.
Spanning various disciplines. Yes.
And the investigation was spawned by a story in ESPN by Baxter Holmes all the way back in November, for those who do not remember, and has reportedly included 300 plus interviews with current and former employees of Robert Sarver. This is, I just want to read a quick excerpt from Howard's piece, which ran a couple days ago on SI.com. In a call with NBA officials Friday, Sharpton conveyed his frustration with the lack of action following a November news report that detailed extensive accounts of racist and misogynistic behavior by Sarver, who also owns the WNBA's Mercury. If the NBA does not wrap up its investigation in the next 3 weeks, or at least provide a concrete timetable for doing so, Sharpton is vowing to bring demonstrations to Phoenix in April. Quote, I communicated to them, I appreciate that there's an investigation into these allegations, Sharpton told Sports Illustrated. But it seems to me like it's dragging, to the point where it seems like they want people to forget about it. And I'm not going to let people forget about it. Rohan, is there a scenario where Robert Sarver stays on as Suns owner?
Man, that's the million-dollar question, Mike. I kind of see there's a scenario where he does. Not to defend the NBA, because it is strange to me how long the investigation has taken. At the same time, I imagine it's very complicated. The Sarver situation was weird. I mean, if you remember with Donald Sterling, right, the players are ready to boycott, players are ready to skip a playoff game, etc. Here, we haven't heard much from the players. There was a pretty vociferous defense from all levels, from many levels of the organization, that you typically don't see, and was shocking to both of us at the time that people were willing to put their names on that that early in the process. And, you know, there's been kinds of stories about Sarver being, I guess, eccentric is, for lack of a better phrase, over the years. I really don't know how this one's going to turn out. And obviously, you know, I don't have any issues with that protest. I have some sympathy for the players, you know, who are going to be probably having to answer questions about this at some point, maybe have to answer questions about it during the playoffs when it seems to be entirely over their heads. But to be honest, I don't know if it's taking so long because the NBA is looking for a smoking gun, the kind of thing you need to, you know, definitive proof to maybe get someone out of the league. But I don't know. Maybe it's because of the lack of information, but I don't really have a, my gut right now doesn't, I don't feel strongly that Sarver is going to be removed.
I mean, the longer this goes on, the more likely you would assume that he stays on. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point of Sharpton trying to draw attention back to this investigation, which I think, you know, we don't hear about it very often. It's been a long season. It's barely talked about. It was the story of the whole league for like a week and then nothing. And I just kind of feel like I've obviously never participated in an investigation like this. And I don't know what goes into it. Obviously they're trying to do their due diligence and interview as many people as they can. I just wonder like how awkward it would be if the Suns won it all and the NBA still hadn't concluded this investigation by the NBA finals, or like, what if the league announces its findings and they're not to everyone's liking while the Suns are in the middle of a playoff run?
Yeah. I gotta say, you'd think it'd be in the NBA's best interest to put a button on this investigation quickly because of the reasons you said. I mean, the later it goes on, is it going to come out during the playoffs? Is Silver really going to hand the trophy to Sarver if the Suns do win? And that's why I'm a little bit surprised that it has gone on for so long, because you'd think it'd be in the league's best interest to wrap this up quickly, which is another reason why I do think they are doing their due diligence, because they'd want to get this over quickly. So I don't know. We have no reason to trust really our institutions in situations like these. I mean, especially sports leagues. I mean, we just saw what happened with the Deshaun Watson trade. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we can't say they put a priority on these things that are outside of the game, but you'd think the NBA would want to move as quickly on this as possible. It's for selfish reasons, which lends me to believe that it's just taking the investigation longer than they imagined.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I don't really have too much to say about this. I just wanted to kind of shine a little bit of light on it here, because I feel like it's an important investigation, the revealings or the results or whatever of it. There'll be a huge ripple effect no matter what they are. And yeah, I hope for the Suns' sake, you know, they go through this entire season, you know, if the findings are that Robert Sarver is cleared and is just kind of A-okay, I don't think people are going to really like jive with that at all. And that could, and I don't know if players will then be kind of, because the statements that have been made are basically like, we're going to wait for this process to carry itself out. So if the process carries itself out and there's no punishment, despite,
I mean, it's possible, right, that there's something in between no punishment and him getting actually removed as owner of the team. I mean, when the Mavericks, which started with Sports Illustrated reporting John Wertheim and Jessica Luther, but, you know, when the Mavericks had their situation as it regards to sexual harassment within the organization. We saw Mark Cuban get suspended, pay a very big fine. I think it's possible that there's punishment for Sarver that's not quite him getting removed from the league, but it's, you know, whether it's substantial enough or even substantial to anyone, I think there still could be punishments levied against him.
Right. If the,
I mean, if they won a title and he's suspended and he can't be there, that's a pretty big punishment, you have to imagine. I mean, when you're talking about the things we're talking, I don't even know that punishments are like ultimately what we should be focusing on here. But yeah, I do think there could be something happen that's on him being removed.
Right. It's also just a quick comparison to the Maverick situation. That was an owner overseeing a dysfunctional environment. This is an owner who is the reason for the dysfunctional environment. So it's a little different. And for a league that purports to be on the right side and has done a lot of wonderful work on the right side of social justice for the past, for a very long time, for decades, for them to, not or to accept someone who, you know, says the N-word and in private, and all the other things that he's done, some of which he has denied, some of which he has tried to explain through his lawyers. So to keep that person involved with the NBA in the NBA family, I don't know. It's not, that wouldn't be cool at all, I don't think. Okay, so let's switch gears and go back to basketball, which is what I know everyone wants to hear and what we want to talk about. I posed this random question to you, Rohan, in our outline, because the league is so wide open and because there are so many pseudo/legitimate contenders, what's the worst team right now that you can conceivably just picture winning the title of the season?
So there's a couple ways to look at this. One is like, which team just straight up with the worst record? Because then you could just say, well, Brooklyn, I mean, you know, they've been 500 the whole year. But I think we all agree, like, Brooklyn.
That's not right.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, I think if I were, like, and it would, frankly, I think take injuries. I think if I'm picking one from each conference, it's Denver in the West, and Cleveland is actually my pick in the East.
Wow. So let's start with Cleveland. What's going on there?
It's just like the route I imagined is like first round, let's say they get the 6-3 matchup and they get Philly and they're able to beat Philly, which, you know, they played them well the other night without Jared Allen.
I don't think I think that that's a bad matchup for Philly, to your point.
Yeah. And so then let's say Boston's in the 2-7 somehow and gets knocked out by the Nets. It's a stretch. I mean, like I said, it would take some injuries. My real overarching take for Cleveland, though, is like they're just such a funky matchup for most teams, especially when Markkanen, Mobley, and Allen are all healthy, that like maybe every series, there for some reason there's one matchup they can exploit because of how weird the team is built, that they're somehow able to get through, and maybe the other teams have injuries. I mean, you know, like we said, like these other teams, they aren't perfect, right? Like Boston does have some offensive slumps. Their shooting can be like hit or miss. Not like obviously it all is, but at times, like, are Pritchard and Derek White, you know, can they shoot well enough in the playoffs? Like, can the Heat score well enough in the half court? You know, they have guys to throw at Giannis theoretically. Again, it's a hard argument to make because it's not a good one, but it just comes down to them being such a funky matchup.
Yeah, I agree that they're a funky matchup. They'll go to that 3-2 zone in a series, which is why I think that they can give a team like Philly fits that loves to run the Harden and beat pick and roll.
They could throw Mobley at every team's best defender, and he's going to make it difficult for best scorer. Yeah, he's going to make it difficult for them.
Sure. It's also a rookie in the playoffs. And
certainly.
Yeah. I definitely was not expecting that. The championship's hard. And like, I
agreed.
It's hard to win four straight playoff series. What was your other team? Denver?
Yeah.
Is the case there basically? So we just learned that Jamal Murray is, quote, not close to returning, which is unfortunate.
You know, I have some thoughts on that. I was in Denver, obviously, recently for that Jokic story.
And Jamal Murray told you that he's coming back in two weeks? Is that what happened? Are you breaking news here?
No. Okay. I think that they are... This is not me reporting. This is me speculating based on just vibes. This is me just going purely off vibes. But I feel like they're trying to just take as much pressure off of him as possible. I do think that MPJ is closer to coming back than Murray. At the same time, I think that they want Murray to come back in an environment that's nobody's expecting him to be the reason they make a deep playoff run. But I have a sneaking suspicion. I mean, he's practicing with the G League team. Like, that's not like that's usually like a significant step in these returns. So I don't know how he could do that. And then you say he's not close. To me, those two things aren't congruent. So I think that maybe they're just trying to remove pressure off of him with statements like that.
Okay. I still think that I can't see Denver winning the title, even if Murray comes back this year. It's just too hard.
I think if they can get MPJ back, they're going to actually be pretty scary. That's going to help them a lot.
So if they were to be, so their path is basically play in, 7 seed, win.
I mean, if they get to 6 and get the Warriors in round 1 and Draymond can't be Draymond, like the Warriors aren't a great matchup for them. I mean, they're both a difficult matchup for each other.
But you would pick the Warriors, correct?
Okay, but why are you? Did you? I don't think you understood the exercise here because I'm not saying
Denver. The exercise.
Yeah, but I'm not saying Denver is going to win the title. The whole point is that it would take some breaks and some luck, but they're the worst possible team. It's like, yeah, obviously I'd pick the Warriors, but that's why Denver is the worst. You know what I'm saying? It's like I don't understand why. Well, Who are your picks?
The question is not who is the worst team to be in the playoffs and could technically win the title if the best player on their opponent tore their ACL in every game. So mine is, you know, I was a little more lofty here with my picks. The first one is, I have two, one from my heart, one from my head. The one from my heart is the Clippers, and that's entirely dependent on Kawhi Leonard.
That is such an awful pick.
Why? Why is that a bad pick?
Because you just were like, it's not about which team's best player gets hurt. This is just the flip side of that scenario. This like, is obviously the Clippers are a title contender. No, you have to pick a team that's like, oh, dude, no. That's come
okay.
On, dude.
Okay, so first of all, that was a fine answer. Second of all,
it was not. It was aggressively not.
Second of all, my other team, this is my real team, is the Utah Jazz. I think that's the worst team when I look at all the teams that I can conceivably see winning the championship.
So you just didn't want to have fun with this exercise.
What do you mean? That's a good answer for this question, in my opinion.
They're like top four in their conference.
If the Utah Jazz win the championship, are you going to be like, wow, I saw that coming?
It's not out of the realm of possibility. They've been like a top team in the West for the last 3 years.
So
and
first
they're
of
number
all,
four right now.
So, okay. You fundamentally did not understand. I know I only gave you a sentence in this with this question, so maybe that's my fault. Maybe I need to have more care in my preparation.
No, I just think you went too by the book on this one, and I just expected more creativity from you. I wanted to see a little bit more galaxy brain from you. That's it.
I think the Jazz are, that's a, I think that that's a fine pick for an exercise like this.
It's just like people were picking the Jazz to make the finals before the season started. And that
a lot of stuff has happened since then.
Yeah, but that's why it just is not exciting to me. But okay. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Who's your pick to come out of the West?
The Denver Nuggets.
Okay. So stop.
Okay. Thank you. I do that as a bit every year. Relax.
Okay. All right. So we're going to transition now to this email that I really loved, and I fleshed out into multiple big picture questions that I spent pretty much all afternoon researching. And Rohan, I know that you did the exact same thing, which has me really psyched for your responses. The email comes in from Caleb, who writes, "Even though the Lakers season hasn't been great, LeBron James is now second on the all-time NBA scoring list and deserves his flowers." Do you hear that, Rohan? We should celebrate LeBron.
No one talks about. Can I just say something real quick? Oh, wasn't it 2 weeks ago that everyone was like, LeBron is now the number one scorer of all time, regular season and postseason, and now we got to celebrate him moving ahead of Karl Malone too? Pick one, okay? Pick one.
First of all, I 1,000% agree with you. We're doing regular season here because you can't compare.
Obviously,
like Kareem wasn't playing four playoff rounds. Yes, like it's come on. Okay, anyway, neither here nor there.
Ridiculous.
So anyway, back to Caleb's email. We should appreciate LeBron's amazing long term greatness, hard work, and determination over his career. That being said, with his new accolade, the LeBron James Michael Jordan debates will still be raging all around us. What if instead of asking who is the greatest, how about we ask whose legacy means more to them? Here's the hypothetical scenario. Both LeBron James and Michael Jordan can choose whatever age/year they think was their best. They play a traditional 1-versus-1 to 21, ones and twos, win by two, call your own fouls game. Whoever wins is the greatest.
Have you ever played 1-on-1 all the way to 21?
Absolutely not. I'm not running a marathon anytime soon.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a message from our wonderful producer, Shelby. We will read his answer after I finish. Whoever wins is the greatest, while the loser's legacy is gone. Erased from time, never to be known. Kind of like Shang Tsung in Mortal Kombat declaring your soul is mine after a fight. So, who's best wins, MJ or LJ? Enjoy the pod, the lively banter, and off-tangent rants. Thank you, Caleb. Wonderful question.
See, he loves my off-tangent rants.
He didn't say thank you, Rohan, for your off-tangent
rants. Are you making off-tangent rants?
I'm trying
it's
to
Chris,
keep,
it's, I'm is corralling Chris cats Herring over maybe? Here. Is Chris Herring making off-tangent rants?
You know who is? Shelby, our wonderful producer. Shelby writes 2018 LeBron for LeBron. I don't have that answer. I'm going to respect that answer. I think there's no wrong answer here, to be honest with you, because these guys have so many, MJ and LeBron, their best seasons. It's just a fascinating thought exercise. So what season is LeBron picking? And then we'll get to Jordan.
I think he's got to go 2012-2013 season.
Oh my God. That's exactly what I picked.
Yeah, obviously. It's like obviously his best season is the thing. It's like the combination of his athleticism and IQ there, I think, was at an all-time high. Like he was just in total control of the game.
So real quick, statistically, he's 28 years old. It's a typical 27-8-7, whatever season for him. It's the only year he ever shot over 40% behind the 3-point line. He shot 45% on long twos, 56% from the floor overall, 60% inside the arc. This was also the first year in Miami where he finally started to play some more power forward. He played a little bit of center. He was just at this, athletic apex, just a complete force. So I can see a case for a lot of different LeBrons just because, when he was in Cleveland the first round in, 2008, like the players around him were such garbage that everything he did, like those teams won like 60 plus games. Like
I know. And the Celtics talk so much shit. Like they didn't just knock Wally Szczerbiak out of the playoffs. And I was supposed to respect those teams for going seven games with Doug, Daniel Gibson.
You really
what
got
a joke. What a you really joke, got, dude.
You God, do understand.
Will they ever shut up? Will they ever shut up? Just one championship? Good Lord, dude. The 2016 Cavs were so much more impressive in what they did. And yet they don't even talk about it as much as those 2008 Celtics do. Overcoming the Atlanta Hawks in seven games. Or was it the Sixers? Who was it? Overcoming like Wally Szczerbiak.
You don't even know what you're talking about.
Pathetic.
So,
pathetic.
You're showing your cue cards right here. As a Miami Heat fan, you should probably be appreciative of those Celtics teams because
I'm appreciative of Cleveland's front office putting LeBron, those rosters together.
LeBron does not go to the Miami Heat if it is not for those Boston Celtics teams and LeBron's inability to defeat them time in and time
LeBron's inability to defeat them? That's what you're going with? Oh my
That's what
God.
Happened.
After
what
you happened. Were just talking about the rosters they had? Oh, yes. Man. What a joke. Don't get me started.
I don't understand your hatred.
In all seriousness, LeBron's Cleveland stint has become underrated because people focus on him losing in the playoffs and not realizing how bad those teams were. I'm begging people to go look at the playoff roster for the 2008 Cleveland Cavaliers.
It is shocking. Yes. So the case I can that's what I can understand a case for that iteration of LeBron. I can understand a case for look to Shelby's defense, like what LeBron did in Cleveland on his second go around back there with he's just a smarter player. That's just
yes,
he's a better shooter. You can't go under screens. That's just not a strategy anymore.
He also did not try for the 2018 regular season until the trade deadline. Shelby also adds that Josh Hart has been ruled out for tonight's game. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelby.
Yeah. Thank you, Shelby.
So I'm not that surprised that we had the same answer here, but
I think it's obvious that's his best season. I don't think it's particularly close, to be honest.
So who'd you have? What did you have for MJ's best season? Which is definitely a different. I don't think there's an obvious answer here.
That one, I don't know. I don't. To me, MJ, you can't pick seasons. You have to pick eras. It's like first three-peat, second three-peat, or like Bad Boys Pistons era MJ. Like when he had the big playoff game against the Celtics. It's like you have to pick one of the eras.
I didn't care to look any of this up.
I think I've clearly put thought into this exercise.
Okay, so answer the question: what season would Jordan pick in this hypothetical one-on-one as his best season to go up against LeBron?
I think he's going young MJ. I think he is. I think he wants to be. No.
What is your favorite MJ? What is your favorite MJ season?
Honestly, like probably the 72 win year MJ, just because it's like that is his like coming back post fucking retirement and doing that is insane. Like this is the problem. It's because to me, it's like you can look at the individual stats from any season, right? But this kind of goes a little bit back to like my Chris Paul argument from last week about the NBA all NBA teams and Trae Young. Like MJ being the best player on a team that won 72 games kind of means more to me than like the year he's averaging 35 points a night.
My answer was 95-96. Also,
yes. So I think I'm going 96 MJ.
I just think that was him. That was the best Michael Jordan has ever been as a basketball player. I don't think it's like any Like athletically, no, he is not even close to what he was in 87 and 88 and winning dunk contests. And
yeah.
He's not that guy. When you, first of all, quick side note, in his third season, this man averaged 37 points a game.
Yes, like, that's what I'm saying. It was nuts, dude. It was nuts.
Like with hand checking. Just yeah. Stop. Just stop. But no, I went 96 as well. Magical season, ridiculousness. Still all defensive team. Still, I mean, he's Michael Jordan. He's the best two-way player in basketball. There was some question of, okay, you know, he comes back from baseball. What is he? And he's just like, I'm the best. I win MVP. 35-6. Just like wild stuff from him. So that was my season as well. In
I mean, another reason why I'm being genuine about the MJ Eras thing is like he has that season. It was like his second year where he missed most of the season, right? Like he has the injury.
Broke his foot, yeah.
Yeah. The season where he comes back, you kind of throw that one out. Like he missed most of that season. You know, he plays in the playoffs, but and then it's like, you know, you're not counting the Wizards seasons. It's kind of like he has very few years to pick from.
Well, he played 15 seasons. So.
Right, but two of those were with the Wizards that no one cares about. He missed most of one of them. He missed most of two of them, really, because, you know, when his comeback came, like, in the middle of a season. So it's kind of like, yeah, you're throwing out four of those, right?
Yeah, I think there's still a sizable body of work to choose
it
from.
It is, but it's just like it's weird. It's just, yeah, man. Yeah, the 96 season is nuts. I mean, he still averaged 30 points a game that year, which is just insane.
Yeah, he's – yeah, so who which season is better, 28-year-old LeBron or 32-year-old Jordan?
Man. The issue here is that I think the argument for LeBron has just always been he can do more. Like just his body type, his height, his athleticism. Obviously, it's not like MJ doesn't have these things, but it just always felt like LeBron could do a little bit more. And it's tough. I mean, I watched that 2013 season. I watched every single one of those games. I was, you know, 4 years. I moved to America after LeBron, after MJ's 96 season. I moved to America that summer. I didn't watch any of those games. So it's hard for me to say, but just, you just look at the stranglehold that Jordan had on the league, man. Like, even the Heat won 27 games in a row that year. And still multiple times in that playoffs looked like they could lose it. It's just hard to, it's hard to overlook the stranglehold that Mike had on the league, you know?
It is. He's great.
Yeah.
I would probably pick MJ. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
But we're talking about 9.9 stars versus 10 stars here. So yeah. Also, Michael Jordan wore Jordan 11 Concords that season. Yeah. Just like, stop. Just ridiculous. Man,
7 years in a row, he averaged over 30 points a game. Just nuts. He was good. Just nuts. 87 is probably my backup season, though.
It was a great year, 87.
37 points a night is just, that's insane. That's insane, dude.
Okay, so from this exercise, which I had a lot of fun doing, I thought it would be even more enjoyable to take a look back at the past 25 years and you and I name our three best seasons that any player had in that span, non-LeBron, non-MJ. And this was a joy for me. There's so many great seasons. And you get to go back and look at, you know, do whatever type of research you want to do. I know, Rohan, you were tireless.
I may have missed the non-LeBron prompt part of that question. I may have somehow managed to overlook that.
You missed where it said, not including LeBron or Jordan, what are the three most impressive individual regular seasons in the past 25 years, in your opinion? That's you misread.
I somehow did, yes. But that's okay. That's okay.
That's okay. I didn't follow the rules here.
I'll just substitute it with 2017 Westbrook, so I'm good.
okay.
Also, don't say you followed the rules. You came up
with the rules, baby.
You came up with the outline.
We do it.
You invented the rules.
Exactly. That's my power. Okay. So let me give you my number three here.
Okay.
2014 Kevin Durant. That is his MVP season. Here's the skinny on it. Plays 81 games. Leads the NBA in minutes, scoring 32 points per game, highest of his career. Leads the NBA in usage, PER, win shares. His true shooting that season is 63.5. The Thunder are a total juggernaut. They win 59 games. Russell Westbrook misses half the season after he has knee surgery a couple days after Christmas. They eventually lose to the San Antonio Spurs, the team that spanked LeBron's Miami Heat in the finals that year, in six games in the conference finals. But Serge Ibaka missed a little bit of that series. Who knows what would have happened? Kevin Durant was, I don't even know if technically that was his best season, but it was the most impressive. I don't know if he was the best player that he's been throughout his entire career that year, but what he did was the most impressive in that season. That was the Lee Jenkins year where he's, I don't want to be number two anymore. It was really nothing else you can say about Kevin Durant that year. It's just, he went up a level in every single aspect of his game and hasn't come down since. So that's my number three for best season, individual seasons in the past 25 years.
I like that. I didn't rank mine.
Yeah, that's okay. No one's perfect.
That's a good pick. He was insane. I remember when he won the MVP, TNT did like a highlight mix set to Kendrick Lamar's Now or Never. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is just the Venn diagram of my interests is a circle right now. This is so cool. His MVP speech, I got to say, this is going to sound insane. Like, I've cried literally every single time I've ever watched it. And I've actually watched it several times, but there's just
speech.
There's a line he has in there where he's like, we moved into a one bedroom apartment and we were hugging each other on the floor because we thought we made it. And it's really beautiful. It really is beautiful. Yeah.
It's been memed, unfortunately, because society can't have good things, but great speech.
Yeah, it really is beautiful. 2014 KD was on my list. Let me put it that way. I have like five or six seasons on my list.
Okay.
2014 KD's high up there for me. You're right. Because I remember that Jenkins story. He's like, I'm no longer number two. And that was the year I think that people for the first time were kind of like, I think that was the first time people entertained the KD LeBron argument, who's the best player in the league. And the fact that that was happening after LeBron's 2013 season, like, says a lot about just how insane KD was that year.
Okay. Give me a season of yours.
2016 Steph Curry.
This was my number one.
Yeah, I think that's
not to spoil it.
Yeah, that one was, it was insane. Like I said, best player on a team that won 73 games, just impact off the charts. Like, that's the thing. It's like, I was looking through and thinking about this. Like, we mentioned, KD's like scoring and true shooting and all those things. Like, and it was a fantastic season, no question. But for Steph to be the engine of that level of team success, you can't measure it in his stat line, but 2016 Steph was the reason he was the first unanimous MVP. That was unlike anything we'd ever seen.
So real quick, the stats, I'll just do the shooting splits because those are the most impressive. 50.4 field goal percentage, 45.4 three-point percentage, 90.8 from the free throw line, His win shares per 48, 30.318. And in the history of the MVP award, which Steph was this is the first unanimous MVP. Only LeBron in 2013 and MJ in 91 are higher, besides Kareem going back to like the 70s. He did it a couple times. So it's just, this was easy for me. Like, this season changed basketball forever. Mm-hmm. It was unlike anything anyone had ever seen before. No one will ever see anything like it again in all likelihood. Complete magic. Yeah, it was very easy to make this number one for me. Okay, so my number two, best individual season of the past 25 years. After I give this, I have a couple honorable mentions. I know you have a long list.
I really do.
It is 2004 Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett, his MVP year. That was on my list.
Yes.
04 KG, so, man.
Here's the little Wikipedia entry, the case. 24.2 points, league high 13.9 rebounds, 5 assists, 2.2 blocks, 1.5 steals, led the league in PER win shares per 38, box score plus minus, VORP, value over replacement player, the highest VORP in 25 years besides two LeBron seasons, arguably the best defender in the league, played all 82 games. The Timberwolves won 58 games and were the number one seed in the Western Conference at a time when I know the Shaq and Kobe were still teammates. I know that they were feuding, but they were still teammates. Like,
yeah. He had Duncan, Shaq, and Kobe in the same conference. Yeah, come on.
And my favorite stat when I was just digging into it, the Wolves were plus 9.8 points per 100 possessions with KG on the floor that season. There was a plus 20.7 net differential. So for context, we talk about Jokic, right? Mm-hmm. And the net differential. KG's that season was plus 20.7. Right now, Jokic's is plus 14.5. Just otherworldly from KG. That season is truly, I mean, I know this is a regular season exercise, but go back and watch the conference semifinals against Sacramento, game 7. He literally is their point guard. It's like, what is even happening?
That was the only year they made the conference finals, right?
It was the only year he ever got out of the first round Minnesota. Truly, man, this wild.
I'm going to be serious for a second. It's going to sound like I'm hating. This is why it really bothers me that I feel like society is starting to remember Kevin Garnett as a Boston Celtic, because he was so good in Minnesota and was one of my favorite players in the league. He was the first NBA jersey I ever owned. It was my 21 black KG Wolves jersey. I made my parents take me to a Heat Wolves game because I wanted to see Kevin Garnett. He was so fun. Like, oh man, like, he was just cool too. I remember like Shaq was like, you know, would talk trash and Kevin KG was like, how could you not love Shaq? Yeah, he's fun. Like, the Big Ticket was a sick nickname. And I was like, this guy came out of high school. Like, man. And like, that inner ownership situation needs to get sorted out because he needs to get his jersey retired in Minnesota. What a bummer that was that he only got out of the first round that one time. Like, man, he was so good. He was so good.
Yeah. We could go on forever about the ways he changed the NBA and all that. Don't really have time for it, but it is, I 100% agree with you. Like, it was, I don't want to say uncomfortable. A part of me watching the retirement ceremony in Boston, I was just like, it's like some of this just like doesn't feel right. And he will get his jersey retired someday in Minnesota. He's the best player in Minnesota Timberwolves history, franchise history. It's like not even close. Who number two is. Number two is probably Karl Towns. It's like not close right now with KG. And it's just like he played 5-6 years in Boston. post 30 was like, he still won defensive player of the year his first season there and then had a knee injury the next season and was never the same. But what he did in, I mean, just go back and watch 2004. Watch that season. Yeah. Like, look who's on his team with him and what he's doing. No disrespect to Sam Cassell, who is underrated, but like, it's just, it's wild stuff, man. It's just, it's all time stuff. So, do you have another, I gave you my three, do you have one more? And then I'll give a couple quick honorable mentions. Yeah.
This one's, it's nostalgia for me. And I still don't think the numbers do it justice. I have to have 2000 Shaq on mine.
Sure.
30 and 14, 4 assists, 57% from the field. He played 40 minutes a night. Dude, imagine having to guard Shaq for 40 minutes in the year 2000. He jokes about it, but he really was the most dominant big man in the game. Like, no answers for him. And like, if anybody I know somewhere out there, there's some nerd who's like, Shaq couldn't cut it today. He couldn't guard a pick and roll. Like, bro, 2000 Shaq in today's NBA is feasting. And I had to have 2000 Shaq on my list. Like, not because aesthetically it was maybe the most dominant we'd seen out of all these, out of the last 25 years, like from pure watching it, like man amongst boys level basketball from Shaquille O'Neal.
He is an honorable mention. Absolutely. Going back, and that was his only MVP season. Mm-hmm.
Should have been unanimous. Shout out Fred Hickman.
Who did he vote for?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I'm actually going to look this up right now. Yeah. Can you just talk while I look this up? We have to, you're a pro.
I will. I'll just say that, Shaq is the player who made me fall in love with basketball. I loved big men growing up, like Shaq, so KG. And
so I actually have, okay, I have the results here. Number two that year was KG. Number three, your boy, Alonzo Mourning, got some votes.
So, yeah, hell yeah, man.
Other votes went to the mailman, Tim Duncan, Gary Payton.
Yeah, but who else got the other first place vote?
Oh, wow. Allen Iverson.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it might have been Iverson. I knew it. Yes, it was someone weird. Yes.
Who finished seventh overall
in
the voting. Yikes. Yeah. We should go back at some point and look up who made that mistake.
Fred Hickman.
There was also shout out to Fred. There was also a year that the Globe's Gary Washburn voted for Carmelo Anthony and ruined LeBron's.
That's right. Anime. Yes. And,
shout out to Gary. So other honorable mentions here.
08-09 Dwayne Wade. I'm serious.
Just no, go ahead.
Yeah.
Talk.
No, I just, if we're
that's all you want to say.
Yeah. 08-09 Dwayne Wade. One of the best shooting guard seasons of all time. I think 08-09 D Wade is like up there with any Kobe season.
I agree with that. And I also, I don't know, I've said this many times before, but like the year that Kobe did win MVP, that should have been Chris Paul. Like, and Chris Paul's season that year is one of my honorable mentions. It's like myth-making stuff. When you go back and look at what Chris Paul did, third year of his career, 22 years old, finished his second in the MVP. He's statistically even better in 09, but the Hornets, the New Orleans Hornets, won like 56 games or something. Yeah. It's like, what is going on? This dude just took over. That was before the knee surgery. Yeah. Just ridiculous stuff.
To give you 09 D Wade, 35-7, 2.2 steals, 1.3 blocks. He was their best backline defender. Like, he was their rim protector. He was what I miss most about the early part of Dwayne Wade's career was he was an elite rim protector, like a truly elite rim protector. And he shot 49% from the field that year. shooting only the most insane shots, like shooting only like layups over three people or pull up mid-range jumpers. The Heat, sorry, I dropped my phone. I was so excited. I've also come around to the take that the Heat just botched the first 7 years of Dwayne Wade's career, even though they won a championship. They botched his career until they got LeBron, and it's something that bothers me deeply.
He needed the greatest player of all time to resurrect his career, save his career. Is that what you're saying? Is that the case you're making?
No, I'm saying that the Heat sold their soul for like what's easily like the worst and least memorable championship team of the last.
I love that team.
I mean, I loved watching them. Don't get me wrong. I love Twan. I love Jay Will, Posey. They had fun players, but like they were
GP, baby.
Yeah, Gary Payton hit some crazy shots during that stretch run, but that team fell apart within months of winning that title. And then the Heat fell apart soon after that. Like they gave us the Zoe gift, though.
Yeah, they gave us the Zoe gift the next year in the playoffs. But
no, that was literally the first night of the season.
Oh, right.
And then they got swept by Chicago, and Dwayne Wade's shoulder was messed up. But I mean, they totally botched like building a sustainable winner. The first 7 years of his career. And it could have, if they had known what they were doing then, it really could have changed the course of the NBA.
So, I mean, yeah, I hear what you're saying for sure. I think like, you know, the Michael Beasley pick, you think that maybe there's going to be a little bit more there.
That's tough. Yeah. I mean, they made the pick everyone at the time would have made, and that's a tough one. But I mean, just beyond that, I mean, I honestly think there's an argument with how good Wade got, I mean, which they didn't know at the time, but in some ways it's kind of like what the Lakers have done now, right? Like they got the one championship, but was that worth it if the next two or three years you can't even make the playoffs? Like the Heat went all in for this one ring instead of trying to build a sustainable winner around Dwayne Wade. I mean, you look at his, again, like 2008 to 2010, probably the two best years of his career, those teams just weren't good. And that was because they were saving cap space for LeBron, all these things. Like, I don't know. Especially if we're taking LeBron seasons out, like I think Wade wins MVP if LeBron doesn't that year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think that it would have been interesting if they try to build a sustained winner then instead of going all in for this one ring and then saving cap space for LeBron.
There are a lot of other seasons that we have not talked about. There's Duncan, early Duncan, 02, 03 Duncan.
Honestly, 07 Nowitzki, like
50-40-90.
Yeah, like that team was terrifying. And they get clowned now because they lost in the first round. But 07 Nowitzki was, bro, he came back with a vengeance.
As you were saying, 2017, Russell Westbrook just took the league by storm that year.
I will always defend that season. Like, people get too worked up about it. Like, it was fun. I don't, like, do people...
No, it was,
like,
it was. Yeah. It was fun. It was not for the MVP. You know, that's what ruined it. You got it should have been like a... It would still be looked at as like this cultish, if you know, you know, unbelievable season, which it was. But because he won the MVP... People took it a step too far.
Yes, I even defend the MVP. Like people like just take it so seriously. Like it's this. I remember going to a Nets game that year, and like fans groaning when Russ would pass to a teammate and they'd miss their shot because everyone in the arena just was there to see him get a triple double. Like that was
so awful.
But it was just a cool experience. Like everyone wanted to see him make history, and that was fun. Like that was a fun aspect of that season.
Harden had some great years. You got to shout out Harden, his prime with the Rockets. And Kawhi should have won MVP that season is all I want to say before we move on. I think that's going to take us to the end of today's episode. This might be the longest one we've ever recorded, Rohan.
Really?
I think so. I'm not positive. Our listeners, our eagle-eyed listeners can double check for us. But thank you so much for your wonderful insight. Thank you so much to our listeners. Please keep your emails coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody, please stay safe. Everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season. Whoa. Yeah. Whoa.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.